took them to Canada?
Well, Dick Holt had a job there. He is a physics professor at the University of Western Ontario. And I'll skip a few years of her life up there because she made up her mind to be a mother and a housekeeper. She wanted to be home with her kids. And as the children developed, by the time the oldest, Benjamin, was ready for Sunday school, well, skip school because everybody goes to school, but Renee had always hoped that her children would have more of an influence of the Jewish tradition than she felt that she didn't have as much as she should have. She always feels that we were remiss. But as I said, I think in the beginning, we knew that the children had to have Jewish education. So they did go to Sunday school. They were both confirmed. But she always felt that there was something missing when we didn't observe all of the holidays. Well, we observed the main ones, of course. But she wanted to do more for her kids. And she has done it. All the children are, well, the two boys have been bar mitzvahed already. And Nina will have her bat mitzvah in another year and a half. Oh, my God, I can't believe it.
What are the children's names?
The middle child is Daniel. And the youngest is Nina. Oh, they were all born in Canada. Well, let's see, March. So Benjamin is 16 and a half. Daniel is 14 and a half. And Nina is 11 and a half. And they're all fluent in Hebrew. And they're fluent in French because they go to an all-French school up in London, Ontario. And the middle child is a math whiz, and he's been advanced from 8th grade to 11th grade in math. He skipped 9th and 10th. So I'll do a little grandmotherly bragging.
What about their musical talents?
Oh, their musical talents, yes. They are all musically talented. And
what do they play?
Well, Benjamin plays the violin and the guitar. Mm-hmm. Very talented, as I'm so proud to say. And let's see. Daniel plays the cello and the piano. And Nina is a ballerina as well as a pianist. And all of them have won prizes in competitions up there. They're doing very nicely.
What about Renee? Does she
still plays the piano. She studies yet. She keeps at it. And she's a bit of a linguist. But she is, at long last, going to finish her thesis for a master's in history. She's gone back to that.
Tell us something about Steve.
Well, Stephen is a personality also is his own. Different from Renee. Very athletic and very intelligent. Quite serious, and he likes to say conservative, but he had his time of rebellion, as most of the kids in the growing up in the 60s did. He let his hair grow long and a full beard and all the things that his parents didn't like, but there wasn't much we could do. But he is very athletic. He's an expert skier. And he used to swim a lot more than he does now. But He finished college in 1967, I think. 67. No, that doesn't sound right. 72, sorry. And almost immediately went to work in the family business. And I think we allowed him a week off.
Where did he go to college?
Oh, he went to Marietta College in Ohio. Yeah. It took a liberal arts program, but he majored in economics. And he had been working at our company for many, many years. All summers he worked there, and he really learned the business from the ground up. And that is literally because he was painting the floors. And he knows all the machinery, the workings of everything. And over the years his responsibilities grew, and he has helped the company develop to a large extent. It's to his credit. And Aaron gave him the opportunity to show what he could do. You know, he didn't restrict him too much. But Stephen has always had some good ideas, and he's able to carry on the business in a very first-rate manner. People like him.
When did he get married?
He got married the same year Renee did, in August of 78. And his wife's name, if you'd like to have it, is Lynn. Lynn. Short for Evelyn. I've never called her Evelyn. Lynn Silberman. Lynn Eninger. Lynn Eninger.
How does she spell Lynn?
E-N-I-N. Oh, how do you spell Lynn? L-Y-N-N. Yeah.
And her?
E-N-I-N-G-E-R. She grew up here in Pittsburgh.
Where did they meet, Frieda?
Pardon me?
How did they meet?
Lynn was working with a young woman, and they are both psychiatric social workers, and this friend of hers was married to a young attorney who was a friend of Stephen's. And this couple decided that they should get their friends to meet each other, and that's at the home of the Burks. And that was it. Didn't take long. Now, Renee met Dick, if you want to get back there. She met Dick up at Cambridge. He was a graduate student at Harvard. And they met 5 years before they got married. Then they didn't see each other for a long time. I mean, that doesn't have to go in there. you can erase that.
What about Stephen and his children?
Stephen and the children. Well, they do have two boys. Michael will be 12 this year, and Ted will be 10 in a few weeks. No, I'm sorry, 9. Ted's going to be 9 on the 10th of April. And the boys are both very good students at St. Edmund's, and creative, very artistically creative. They're not too active musically, although Michael does study recorder, but he's thinking of branching out and either going into clarinet playing like his grandpa, or maybe guitar like his father used to do. So the interest is there, but they have so little time. It's kind of interesting the way the kids are these days, with all their school activities and the sports. They're very sports-minded. There just isn't a lot of time for extra things. But they're very sociable and very loving kids. And of course, Stephen, with his hardworking ways, he keeps busy just running the business. And he's very involved with his alma maters, both of them. He's now on the board of Pennington School, mm-hmm. where a prep school that he went to in New Jersey.
Did you spell that, please?
Pennington in New Jersey. He's also on the board of Marietta College, which is a very, very wonderful accomplishment. He's quite proud of it, and it's just a wonderful thing. He has many, many interests. He does woodworking. Oh, he does wonderful woodworking. And he's self-taught. And I must say that Stephen and Lynn are music lovers and go to the symphony and the ballet, and they're following in our footsteps in so many ways, but more so, well, maybe they're a little more involved than we were.
More involved in what?
Pardon
more,
me?
More involved in what?
Well, maybe, let's erase that. Stephen is definitely involved in the youth symphony and the ballet and the civic light opera. Now, Aaron had other interests in music, but I guess that it's in the blood.
Frieda, would you like to tell us something about what Aaron did for communities beyond Pittsburgh, both nationally and internationally? I know you've mentioned Florida and New York.
Yes.
New York we've talked about already,
yeah.
But Florida.
Baruch College in New York, he has established an endowment there to bring music to the students at the Baruch College, undergraduate level.
I think you told us about that, but
and then
we have some others too.
Well, yes, at Allegheny College in Meadville, he started a recital series about 7 years ago, and up there, it's also. That's a community effort, a community service, I should say, where it's not just for the school, that the entire community are really interested in these free concerts, and it has brought some new interest to the area, because we're bringing, I'm still continuing that, bringing nationally known artists up there. And then in Florida, we have been supporters of a new conservatory called the Harrod, H-A-R-I-D Conservatory. And, well, we've supported them in many ways, in the library and financially for scholarships to the students, and presenting musicians in recital. Apart from the faculty, we brought in guest artists. Internationally, the only thing I can say is that we have given financial support to some of our friends who are musicians. Nothing is as we're doing in this country. But we've supported some of the young people in Ireland who always need help.
Would you like to tell us about the piano that you're donating to Rhoda?
Ah, yes. Yes, I would.
Are you all right, Cindy?
Mm-hmm. You have, turn the page.
I just cramp.
Okay. Well, I always felt that the piano that the Rhoda Shalom Temple owned was adequate but not good enough. And we were bringing more and more important musicians to the temple. And every now and then we would have to go out and rent a better piano. And at some point, another family did give a piano to the temple, but it wasn't a Steinway, it was a Baldwin, and it was small. And while the gesture was gratefully received, it served its purpose after about, the last 12 years. It has been used, and successfully, but not enough. And so I was on the lookout for a concert grand, which the size of the hall seems to require. And because the cost of one of those is out of sight, I started to look around for a rebuilt, a used one. And through a friend who is a member of the Alexander String Quartet, I was told about a piano that was available, and it has been in storage for 23 years, and it was part of the estate of Pearl S. Buck, very famous writer from the 20s and 30s. Is that you? Can we stop the machine while you're doing that? All right, so let's see. To continue, I heard about this piano from the estate of Pearl S. Buck, and without going to Philadelphia, I decided I would have a technician check it out for me and a pianist play it and give me opinions. Well, both people gave it high marks and felt that it would be a very worthy purchase. So, sight unseen, I took a chance, but the agreement was that if it came here and I wasn't happy with it, I could return it. So it came, I bought it, everybody here was happy with it, and on April 17th, 1976, which is just a few weeks from now, there's going to be a dedication. And I have engaged musicians who were in the first few years of our series, of our Max Zimmerman recital series, which is now 15 years old. And I was able to get five musicians who were with us in the very beginning of our struggles setting up this series, and they've been very loyal to us and are always happy to come back to play at the Road of Sheldon Temple. So it's going to be a very lovely event, I hope, and people are excited about it because the piano was built in 1929, which was a very, very good year for Steinways. And it's a beautiful piano that I'm proud to say that I could do this for the temple, and it's being dedicated to Aaron. And there will be a plaque put onto the side of it. And there's a short history of the life of Pearl Buck that's written on the back of the program. And it'll be a very exciting evening. I just hope that future generations will really take good care of it and get as much pleasure out of it as I am, and our audience will.
Rita, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about the series at Road of Shalom. I don't think we've touched on that so far, please.
All right, well,
how it started.
One night, in the middle of the night, Aaron woke up, and he said, "I know what I want to do." And I said, "Oh, please, let me go back to sleep." He always got his best ideas in the middle of the night. I said, why don't you write it down and tell me about it in the morning? No, 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 I have to tell you right now. He said, I'm going to bring a recital series to Rosh Hashanah Temple. So, when he says he wants to do something, he usually goes out and does it. And I didn't object because I was too sleepy. But the next day we did talk about it further, and he said he would confer with the rabbi, that was Walter Jacob at the time, and Victor Cavalier, who was the executive director. And they both thought it was a brilliant idea. And the best part was that the programs would be free to the public. And it would also be presented in the month of June, when things had slowed down, the symphony was finished, all the other series were finished. There was a lull before people go away on vacation, and it seemed like an ideal time. And so the first program was in May, actually, of 1981. And we brought Carl Haas, who has the radio program Adventures in Good Music. Very, very well-known person in music. Now, he came, he performed, and got the thing in motion. We've had him back several times as a special guest. But ever since then, it has developed. We've gotten bigger and better audiences. We have wonderful audiences. We practically fill the place all the time. It's a very popular thing because it's just bringing something special to the city. And last year I was able to get 5 fantastic jazz musicians here. And for a departure, we had a real rollicking evening. It was a great event. But this year, I'm back to the classics. Uh-huh. And every year, there are 4 programs in June. And it has really been one of the highlights of our career that we've established this, and it's been so successful.
And wasn't it named for your father?
Yes. That was the thing about Aaron. He always wanted to do something for somebody who he revered. And he said he was going to call it the Max Emmerman Recital Series, and he did. And we told people who Max Emmerman was and who Daisy Emmerman was. The first few years, there was a story about my parents in the program. Then later on, we put a picture of them because we thought people should know what they looked like. And
didn't your father bring a group initially? Wasn't he still living when you started the series?
No.
No?
No.
He used to take a group of people for Riverview.
Oh,
somewhere.
Yes. My father, when he lived at Riverview, decided that all the people who were interested in music should have an opportunity to go to the programs. And those programs were the symphony, the Y, chamber music, the ballet, whatever it was that he had tickets for, he got a group of people together, and he managed to get complimentary tickets for them, and he arranged for transportation to get these people to the various events. And that was really nice. And that was one of the things that I grew up with. You do something for somebody. And at his advanced age, he was already 83 or 4 at that time. But he was very busy organizing these things so that other people could get a little pleasure in their lives. Because living at Riverview, there isn't that much to be happy about, except that you're still breathing. But he got a little bit of enthusiasm for these things out of them and or into them, and it really was wonderful. And so Aaron felt that he deserved to have his name brought before the public.
We're almost at the end of the tape, although we have quite a lot more questions. I think we'll have to go on to another date. We've got such a lot of notes already.
We'll get our calendars out and coordinate.
We had put down...
Do you want to ask me your question?
Yes. Did you and Aaron have any experiences with anti-Semitism, Frieda?
Well, I don't remember anything especially in my early years. And in Pittsburgh, I can't say I've ever experienced it. But I do remember things that Aaron told me about his experiences as a young man in New York. And he was living in Brooklyn and went to an all-boys school, and it was a very rough neighborhood. And he was subjected to it, and it was very upsetting. But then as he got a little older, when he was out of high school and he was a musician and needed a job to help with the family, he found that by going to the employment agencies and giving his right name, he never got the job. The same agencies, he would go back with another name. He was very enterprising. He took a name out of the blue, printed up little cards, and handed his card to an agent who, when he looked at the name, said, "Oh, yeah, we have a job." He never had trouble getting a job under an assumed non-Jewish name. And that was very hard for him. He hated it because it was against all of his philosophies and all of his beliefs in one world and unity and all the good things that we should be able to live with. But I think that eventually when we came to Pittsburgh and he started his own business and he was recognized for his own abilities, there was never a question. There was just he had no problems when he needed to go to a bank, and he had no problem meeting the business public here.
Mm-hmm.
And when he started his business, he went to the various companies and was his own salesman, and nobody turned him down because of his name, and he felt good about that because he had remembered the hard times. And but I don't recall... for myself. Oh, I will tell you, yes, I had one bad experience. When we were out west, we were just married and we had gone to Monterey. And I needed a job because, first of all, I couldn't just sit around in a hotel room. And Aaron was in the Army and away much of the time. So I was looking for the ads, and I was a very good secretary. And I had a good reference from New York, and I had a good reference from Oregon, mm-hmm. where I had been. And I had been, I may have mentioned it earlier, working for the publisher of the Oregonian. And up there it was very liberal, and it was all very nice. Being Jewish didn't matter. But when I got to Monterey, and I answered an ad for the telephone company, I had all the qualifications, but I was told point blank that we do not hire Jews. And it hit me so hard because it was something I was really unaccustomed to. The other thing in Salem, though, the first experience was really not so terrible, but I was looking for a room. Did I mention this before? I needed a place to stay, and I answered an ad for a boarding house. And the lady of the house took one look at my dark curly hair and she said, "Are you Jewish?" I said, "Yes." This was before she asked me my name or anything. And I said, yes. And she said, well, I don't think I could take you in because my other boarders might not like it. So this was actually the very first time that such a thing had ever been said. And I said, well, maybe if you got to know me, you would not think that it's the worst thing in the world. She said, but I never saw anybody who was Jewish before. So how did you know to ask me? Well, she just saw the dark curly hair. I mean, that was her answer. And so she took me in. We became very, very close. She was really like a mother to me, and it was wonderful. But, and the other wives of the soldiers were quite happy. They didn't care who I was or what I was, other than we all got along fine. But then the shock in Monterey was really bad. And but it turns out that the phone company had that policy. I wasn't aware of it. But they were known to be anti-Semitic. And